as it should and crack, where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me tonight, the Arthur to my Tommy and the John to my Danny, it's Jason.
Hey, welcome back. Doing another one. Let's get this done. Yeah.
We're going back to back and belly to belly this evening. We're recording back to back podcasts, which it's not unprecedented for me. Is this the first time you've had to record back to back in one night?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And by the way, this is like how the sausage is made for everybody else that's listening.
Yes. Yeah, we're playing fast and loose here. We don't know exactly when I'm going to actually be releasing these, which is going to slightly depend on when Dan has time to edit these. And he's on vacation, so I'm hoping that he has Wi-Fi in his motel room on Wednesday. Otherwise, I have no idea when the heck these things are going to come out. So for all we know, by the time you hear these, we'll have elected Donald Trump. I don't know. So we are back again to talk about a couple more infinitely bingeable shows, thanks to Netflix. So, since we've already spent the last couple hours talking, I think we're going to can our usual banter back and forth and get right to it. Does that make sense to you?
That makes sense. And by the way, I think you came up with a title for this. It's called Thanks Netflix. It's a great title.
But if I call this one Thanks Netflix, what am I going to call the other? Or is it Thank Netflix Part 1 and then Thank Netflix Part 2? Or?
That's right. Let's put this all into the whole banner.
I got to think about it. I got to see what title will attract people to want to check out our whatever this is, podcast. Tired. Uh-oh. Losing it. Okay. Okay. Regroup. Start talking. Let's get moving and start talking about our first series this evening, and that is going to be Peaky Blinders. Now, I first discovered Peaky Blinders, good lord, it was back in, I want to say December of 2014, sometime around there, November, December, I think it was. I think the second season had just been released in the UK or on Netflix or both or within weeks of each other. I don't know. I think I got turned on to it from another podcast. People have been talking about it. It might have been a Nattercast. I feel like it was those guys. I watched the two seasons of it that month. I totally fell in love with the show. Totally loved the show. So I was so excited when I heard that they were finally going to release a third season. And I'm even more excited because I just realized that they've also announced there's going to be a fourth and a fifth season. So they're locked in for two more seasons of this. Amazing. But
that's good. So we got some stuff to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, I'm a big fan of this show from the get-go. I was sold on it before I even watched a frame because I'm a sucker for that time period. I'm a sucker for that genre. So when I first heard about it, my first thought was, and I keep saying the word first, kind of sounds like a British version of Boardwalk Empire, which I had been watching at the time because it hadn't ended quite yet. For anyone who isn't familiar with Boardwalk Empire, that was a show that was on HBO that ended about a year or two ago, which took place for the most part during the 1920s, during the Prohibition era, with the rise of gangsters in New Jersey, as well as eventually in Chicago, New York, etc. Great show. I'm looking at Peaky Blinders. When Peaky Blinders starts in season one, it's 1919. And by the time we get to season three, it's 1924, I believe. if you go back to Boardwalk Empire starts in 1920, and by the fourth season, they're also in 1924. Season 5, Boardwalk Empire, slight spoiler, but really doesn't mean anything. Don't worry, you can still watch it. It doesn't matter if you haven't seen it yet. It actually does a big time jump. It jumps ahead 7 years. So that doesn't mean anything. Don't worry. So I'm curious if Peaky Blinders will end up doing that as well, quite frankly. I have this fantasy in my mind. It's not possible now that Boardwalk is gone, I guess. I said, I wish they could do a crossover where somehow they could somehow encounter each other. Like, you know, someone takes a boat ship to America or vice versa. I think it was an opportunity that kind of got lost. But I really love the show because of the look of it. The actors are all top notch. You better put the captioning on because you're not going to understand half of what anybody says, quite frankly, I think. I love their use of modern music, which could be a drawback in many instances, but I think they've done it very well on this show. The first two seasons were more about using Jack White and then PJ Harvey. In season three, they throw in some Radiohead, which kind of blew my mind. Like, holy shit, Radiohead. I never imagined images of stuff in the 1920s going with a Radiohead song. It works surprisingly well. But it's just a really gripping show to watch. And the problem with Boardwalk Empire was sometimes it dragged its heels a bit because it would have those up until its last season, it was 13 episode seasons. It always felt, oh, they're kind of lagging in the middle here. Get to the point, guys. Peaky Blinders, 6 episodes. They don't got time to waste. They just get to it. Shit happens. They're really, the pacing is really top notch for that show.
Yeah, they really don't waste time at all.
When did you start watching it?
I think I saw it last year, 2015.
Oh, cool.
And like you, once I saw the first episode, I had to watch them all.
I mean, they had me with the first clang of the Nick Cave song, which is
Red Right Hand.
Yeah, I love that song. I love the way it's. I mean, I love the fact that they have to use it in every episode. I mean, there may be people out there who are tired of it. They're silly people because it just adds such a cool level to the show that it's to me it's just as important as having, you know, the strains of the Wes Covina song in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or something. It's just it's such a part of the show for me. But I really like this season, although I do think it was missing a little bit for the first half of the season because there was no Sam Neill character anymore. Did you feel right. Anything like that?
Yeah, that we're not quite sure. They had the vague villain in the background with the priest, but yeah. You didn't really feel his presence until the end.
Yeah, he doesn't become like a serious threat until the second half of the season. But the first half, you're like, eh. You know. And I know they went and they got an actor of some weight, Paddy Considine, however you pronounce his name. I recognized who he was. I just like, oh, he's a name. He's somebody. But Sam Neill had such a strong presence on the show. Actually, in my mind, actually did some of the best work I'd ever seen him do in those two seasons. So when you lost that character, the kind of the yin to Tommy's yang, and such a different actor than Cillian Murphy is as Tommy. I just love the difference in styles. And so, yeah, but once it becomes clear just how horrific a person and villain Father John is, then I think the show kind of ratchets up as far as, oh, now they've really got something going here. And I think the first half, it's good, but it's not as good as you want it to be until that villain really is shown to be worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the first part of the season is just having Tommy be in charge and trying to be legit. Once you get to that point in a mob story, it gets kind of boring. So then you got to bring the guy back down, which is where the last part of the season goes.
Right. I mean, again, and I don't mean to sound like I've just knocked the first half of the season, because actually some of the most powerful stuff does happen in the first half of the season, because, you know, at the end of episode two, rather, is when they kill Tommy's wife, Grace.
Right.
Who had been a character that we followed in the first two seasons. So it was a character he genuinely loved her. This was the real deal with her. And that was all due to the fact that one of his brothers kind of beat up the son of one of the Italian gangsters in England.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think that ends up leading to some of the most powerful stuff in the next episode, which is when Tommy has orders for them to retrieve the Don, so to speak, the guy in charge, which is Vicente Changretta, whatever, and also kill his wife, who
in front of him. kill the wife in front of him.
Right, in which it's not simply the fact that they, Arthur and his other brother, John, have been told that they have to kill this, you know, innocent woman. She had been a teacher. She was, I think, John's teacher at one time. I don't know if she was Arthur's, but she was definitely John's teacher. So she was kind of like this well-known, you know, lovely woman. Why she married a gangster? Well, then again, so did Grace, I guess, whatever. But I thought that ended up giving us one of the more powerful moments in the series when they choose not to. Because that whole scene, I keep thinking they're going to. I kept thinking, oh, they're tricking us, they're going to end up killing her anyway. Or that she's mm-hmm. they're going to lose it with her and kill her. And the fact that they didn't is almost shocking. But yeah, it is more the second half of the season where the storylines really start to build up. And you know, after Tommy gets beaten the holy crap out of, quite frankly. Which is something they do like to do to his character from time to time. You know, give him the Ben Linus treatment, I guess. But I would have to admit that I was spending a good part of the season wondering if we were going to see the Tom Hardy character show up again. Alfie Solomons, who's definitely a standout on the show. He chews the scenery like no one ever has on television before, but it's so awesome. You can't take your eyes off him. The fact that they got him to do this, and I guess the creator, director, writer, or whatever of the show, I think it's Stephen DeKnight, I think it's his name. He's worked with Tom Hardy before. He directed him in a movie, I think Locke, the movie with the guy in the car. The entire movie has to just be driving, I guess. There's more to it than that, but, you know, it's one in the morning, so who cares? But he definitely adds juice to the show any scene that he shows up in, I think.
And he's only in two scenes this year, isn't he?
Is he only in two scenes?
I'm trying to remember that. I know he's in the...
No, he's in more than two scenes. He's not in a lot, but he's in more than two scenes.
Right. You definitely know he's there, though. That's what's so great about his character, especially in the last episode, where it was like they just acted the hell out of that one little scene that they had between Cillian Murphy and Tom Hardy was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely, and the fact, and it's funny how, because Tom Hardy's character, I mean, he's not a good guy. He's not a good guy, and he's not a good guy at all. And that's made clear even in his limited scenes in this series. I was so sure, once again, they were going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy that they didn't. Because I was like, oh, he can show up again, that means. But I just think it's interesting. Like, we're actively rooting for them. Don't kill that horrible guy, because we love him.
Exactly. We like him. We want him around for next season.
Whereas I was waiting for the moment where they would finally kill Father John. It's like, oh, please kill him. Kill him. Kill him painfully. Make him squeal. Make him beg. I want him to die more than any previous character I've seen, maybe even on the show. That's how much of a turnaround they made with his character. Because I don't remember hating any other quote-unquote villain on the show as much as him at that point. I never hated the Sam Neill character.
No, you didn't. He scarred you for life.
Yeah. But, I enjoyed the season. There were some plotting aspects that were a little, you almost wanted to rewind a little bit. It's like, did I miss something? Because the plot between Tommy being forced to work for Churchill, but then you've got the whole stuff with the, trying to create the situation where they were going to essentially escalate tensions between England and Russia as a result of these things. It did get... There was a lot of shit going on. I mean, I was able to follow it. I did rewind a couple times just to make sure I understood exactly what was happening. That's the advantage of DVRs. Thank you. And or Netflix, I guess, actually, in this case. But I don't know if I would have preferred it be a little less convoluted. I guess I'm okay, because then again, one of my favorite movies of all time, and I think the greatest script of all time, is probably 8,000 times more complicated than this was. So maybe I shouldn't make that complaint. Chinatown. Oh, by the way, I love the joke about Chinatown and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, too. Anyway, can't believe we forgot to mention it in our other podcast, which hopefully you've listened to. But I guess I definitely liked the season. I don't know if I liked it as much as the previous one. I think I liked the second season more, maybe because we had more Tom Hardy, maybe because I had what was going on, I was more clear on what the storyline was, and I loved the ending of season two. What did you think of the ending of this season?
It was unexpected. One of the things where you did not see that coming, you know, Tommy's giving him all the money from the job, and he's like, oh, by the way, everybody's getting arrested except for me. And it seemed like such a betrayal, you know, for their big theme of family, family, family. And he's just going to sell them out like that.
Now, I think for some people, that other than being a big shock or surprise, and I was totally shocked by that. I think I said right after I watched it, anyone who saw that coming is full of it. Because there's no way you people saw that coming. Because I didn't catch a hint of that.
But it was totally out of the field. Totally.
Now, the interesting thing is when you watch it and then you sit and you think about it, maybe you go back and watch it again. It doesn't really change it anyway. It's a matter of, do you understand it? Do you get why he did what he did? So I feel like a lot of people watching were like, I don't understand why he just did that. And you know, one could avoid explaining anything and say, well, maybe you're not supposed to. I think I do understand to a certain extent why he did it. I might not agree with that decision, but I guess I sort of get it because of it's kind of like a trade-off for what had happened. And there is an element of saving his own skin as well. Tommy is not quite as self-sacrificing as some other people might be, I guess. Did you, other than being surprised by it, but did you get why he did it when you thought about it?
I had no clue. No, I had no clue at all.
Yeah. I just think because of based on what had happened, that they were going to be coming for them anyway. So I just felt he did this as a way to try to almost like get on top of it and kind of work from the inside. I'm still at a loss because it is the 1920s, so I don't know how good his legal representation is going to be to get them out. But what makes it really interesting is that, well, we're not really clear on why he did it. You know, we can theorize all we want, but it makes us look forward to the first episode of season four that much more. Cause like, how do you come back from this? What are you going to do? What the hell is going on here? And I've said time and time again, specifically with dramatic writing and specifically with television more than anything else, the more you can create a situation where you have no idea how they could possibly get out of it or where they're going to go from that point on, the more impressed I am. Because then you've created a puzzle that you created a situation that you have to find a way out of. And, you know, it's like the classic cliffhanger situation. And they just came up with one none of us saw coming. So I don't know what those first 5 minutes are going to be of season four. I don't know if they're going to do a time jump. And it's 1931. No, I don't know if they're going to do a time jump. And some or all of them are out. I don't know. I feel like most of them can't possibly be in prison because I can't see a show existing where Tommy's out and everyone else is in prison. Because won't the whole show be him just visiting people in prison? So I feel there has to be... I feel like the next season is going to be more like specifically one or two of them will still be incarcerated, but the rest will be out.
You know? Right. I could see like Paulie's son being still in jail.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it'll be like the son and one, but not both of the brothers for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see them doing that because then those two characters, you'd have scenes with them interacting while they were in prison as well. So say it was like Arthur and is Michael her son? I think her name.
Yeah, I think it's Michael.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's Michael. I could see them doing that. That would make a lot of sense to me. In fact, I'm calling it. That's what they're going to do.
It sets up some conflict too between the characters as well. Considering that Polly didn't want her son involved in any of this stuff, but.
Oh yeah, I mean,
but Tommy did it to him anyway.
Well, also Polly had threatened that she was going to bring down the whole damn thing if he let her son be involved. Of course, he was, but now Tommy kind of went and did it himself. He kind of brought down.
That's true.
So unless Polly's going to come and just try to kill him, there's not really much else she can do. So, yeah, it was just, you know, a very strong season. I'm dying to see where the when the next one is. It's always difficult because, you know, Cillian, you know, Murphy is also a movie actor, so you have to work around whatever his schedule is. It's always amazing that they've gotten Tom Hardy to even show up because he's, you know, makes movie after movie now, and major movies at that. So it's when does he have like 3 days he can spare to put on a big beard and stuff? But I can't recommend the show enough, especially to people who, you know, enjoy gangster kind of things and period dramas. And anyone I know, every person I know who watched, that's why I bring up Boardwalk Empire. I tell them, if you haven't watched Peaky Blinders yet and you were a Boardwalk Empire fan, oh my God, you have to watch this. And anyone who has a problem watching British shows, like, but then they watch other ones, like Downton. If you watch Downton Abbey, then fuck you. You can watch Peaky Blinders.
No kidding.
But, again, I would still recommend putting those captions on. Because some of their accents, you know, especially with the Irish brogues and whatever, sometimes lines can get a little hard to understand. Especially because they're using certain phrases and terms that we might not be familiar with. So it makes it that much harder to figure it out at times. Not so much Cillian Murphy's character, Tommy. He's pretty clear. But Arthur can really be difficult to understand at times, especially if he's been drinking. So that would be my one recommendation when you watch a show. I would say you might want to read a little bit while you watch it.
I have to agree with that. Even I can't understand what they're saying half the time. I wear headphones when I watch it. It's still hard.
Right. Oh, one other thing I wanted to say about the season, and then I think we can move on, that I really enjoy. One of the things I did enjoy about this season was, you know, the fact that this is the 1920s, and obviously this being a gangster epic, it's a very male-centric, male-focused show. But the women play a very strong part in this show, especially this season. And we even see the beginnings of kind of some female empowerment with some of the characters. Not just Polly, because Polly was a strong character from day one. But with all the other wives, I mean, Arthur's wife is really turns out to be way more savvy and smart than anyone probably gave her credit for. They probably just thought she was just some, you know, pious religious freak or something. It's like she knows a lot more than anyone else realizes. But, you know, everyone else, you know, Ada, his sister, you know, the other women, I think they go on strike at one point during the season. I really enjoyed that because it was something that didn't get as much focus in the previous seasons beyond Grace and Polly. I like that we got more with these other characters as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel that, other than telling people, check out Peaky Blinders. But of course, if you're listening to what we just did, as I probably neglected to say at the outset, everything we're talking about is spoilery. So if you listen to this, hopefully you watch the show, because otherwise we kind of spoil the show for you a little bit there. Or at least in our mangled attempt at talking about it, I guess. Anyway, I think we can move on to the next show.
Yeah, close the blinds.
Close the blinds. Open the vein, because now we're going to be talking about the bloodline.
You sure you haven't been drinking?
All right, since you had to talk over it, now I got to say the title again, jerk face. Bloodline. So, this was the second season of Bloodline. I had serious doubts about a second season of the show.
You know why? Because they killed the villain in the first season, the brother.
I don't think. See, here's the thing. I'm apprehensive to ever refer to Danny as the villain. I mean, he does some bad things, but I don't know if I would call him a villain. Which is interesting because isn't that kind of like the tagline of the show? About good people doing bad things, whatever. I mean, I know Danny's not a good person either, but he's kind of revealed throughout season one as someone who is victimized. And, you know, maybe there is an element of revenge to his character or justice or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing with season one. Ben Mendelsohn was flat out fantastic. Every scene that he was in season one, you couldn't take your eyes off him, especially as that season went on. He was electric when he was on screen. But the problem was, for me, when he wasn't on screen, when the story wasn't about him, I was like, I didn't care about the stuff with Meg in season one. I defy anyone to really say that they did, because who cared? The stuff with Kevin, you know, the eternal fuck-up of a brother, I thought it was okay, but it was just, oh, you're a fuck-up who can't control his finances, whatever. You know, I just didn't care. I mean, maybe you did, I
didn't care. No.
So then you're left with Kyle Chandler, John. Now, look, I love Kyle Chandler. I love him in Friday Night Lights. I love him whenever I see him show up. He was one of the... I think he should have gotten way more screen time in The Wolf of Wall Street. I really like the actor. He just lends a certain... I would even say gravitas. And you don't usually say that about younger actors. I mean, not that he's young, but he's... Gravitas usually is like the 60 and up crowd, but... There's something about him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's always a certain lived-in feeling to his characters and his performances. So you instantly believe that he is that coach or he is that cop or whatever. But my problem in season one is he doesn't really get all that interesting until late in the season. And I kind of had a big problem with a character who's like... A detective. He's a detective in season one, right?
Yes.
But he doesn't seem to do very much detecting or pay that much attention to, like, these big freaky crimes that are going on in the Everglades there with the bodies showing up or whatever. That should have been a much bigger deal for him. And I found that puzzling at best. I just like, really? The whole show could just be about that, or the focus of his life should be about that, but he's... Doesn't seem to really even think it's that big a deal. Like he's seeing bodies all the time. he's not seeing bodies all the time. You know, he's not on Law and Order, you know.
It's the Everglades, and that's not Miami.
Yeah. So, but by the time you got to the end of that season and, you know, they killed Danny off, which is probably why the final episode, it's got its strong points, but it's also got its weak points, and you realize it's because there's no Danny. And the final reveal, I was kind of like, what? Really? He's got a son? So what?
To me, it just felt like a way to extend it into season two. Like here we're just going to tease this guy. You know, we know we're missing the main guy, but here's the knockoff imitation of him.
Yeah. So I was kind of skeptical about a season two. I mean, I have friends who watched season one who had no interest in watching season two, mainly because they thought, well, you killed off Danny. Why are we going to watch it? Like, well, he's going to be on the show. And they were like, well, was he going to be like flashbacks or a ghost? And they go, probably. It's like, that's exactly what he was. Flashbacks and a ghost. You know, or mm-hmm. or a figment of a character's imagination, which, blah, 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 ghost. Or or to once again reference Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, dream ghost. Gosh, I hope people listen to that podcast. So I went into this season with more skepticism than I generally do when I'm about to watch a new season of a show I've already seen. And I got to hand it to them. They made a lot of smart choices in season two. I'll tell you one right off the bat, which I wish certain other shows, Marvel shows, would do as well. They cut the number of episodes.
They did.
They went from 13 to 10. And that, by doing that, it made it a tighter show. It didn't sag as much as it absolutely would have if it had been 13. You know, which, you know, the kind of thing that Jessica Jones should have done. But here's what I really liked about it. Remember when I said that Kyle Chandler's John didn't really get all that interesting until late in season one? Well, he's fucking he's compelling all of season two, because he's a man with a problem. He's a man under pressure. He's a man with a secret, and not just before it was the secret that had been long suppressed about lying about his brother, which he didn't really seem to give a fuck about that he had done. This about murdering his brother, much bigger deal.
A huge problem for him. It's a huge problem.
I mean, I love that because it as a result of having that be one of the plots and the main plot, quite frankly, it adds a level of tension to every scene he's in, because at any moment something could be done or said which is somehow connected to that and somehow makes him worry about that or somehow brings it. I really thought that was another really smart idea.
I thought it was a lot like, you know, not exactly the same quality, but it's like what happened in Breaking Bad when they tried to get rid of the body in the first season, I think it is.
Yep.
And they end up doing a lot of damage, more damage to the bathtub than anything, you know, in the house, just trying to get rid of the body. And I felt like that's what John was going through, is like everything that he thought was trying to make it better was just making it worse, and he's finding himself more and more boxed in. And you're right, it was a really good story.
Right, and to use Breaking Bad, I mean, then you have other elements that remind me of that, because if it was purely that he did this thing and he's trying to get away with it, and, you know, and things are getting more and more fucked up as he's trying to cover it up and trying to deal with it, that, you know, that works by itself. But the fact that this is a man who also decided that he has to run for sheriff while this is all going on, that he feels he can do that, that, because, boom, classic character flaw. One of the most, I learned years and years ago when I was getting into writing that, you know, your character, you have to have serious flaws in your story, otherwise it's not interesting. And the one that is used the most, and the biggest one of all, is the sin of pride. And that takes its, and that takes form in many different ways, not just the way one normally thinks of the word pride. It's about ego. So when you think of Breaking Bad, that's Walter White. That he believe that he, because remember, at any point in Breaking Bad, whether it be season one all the way through season five, he does any number of things that you'd be like, no, no, why would you do that? You know, and it's all about his ego. It's all about his vanity. It's all about him believing that he's, you know, above this or is capable of this, even if he really isn't. And I kind of think that's what John is doing in this season of Bloodline. Why would you want to put yourself more out there under the micro, you and your family under the microscope when you're trying to get away with having murdered your brother? That makes no sense if you really think about it. You know, because people would want to be, you know, looking into you or picking the fact that your brother's murder is a thing. Of course, your opponent's going to want to make that a bigger story because of your brother's background and what he did. So it's almost insane that he does that, quite frankly.
And I know he thinks he does it so he can, thinks he can control the investigation, but like I said before, it blows up in his face.
Yeah, it's storytelling, it's about control also. I mean, that's a classic thing. Like, whether it's our real lives or when we're watching a fictional character, a lot of times everything we're watching is about control. Characters who feel that they can control a situation, another person, whatever. And it's always that they can't. And that's where your dramatic tension comes in, and that's where things spiral out of control. Again, Breaking Bad, beautifully realized, more so than any other show I can think of. But you could apply that to any number of other shows or over the years, whether it be The Shield or Lost or whatever. And definitely more so this season of Bloodline. Another thing I think they did really well, remember when I was talking about season one, I talked about how, don't give a fuck about Meg and her stories, just who cares, and I didn't really care about Kevin's stuff. They were smart again, because they tied them more to the main story. They're part of it. They're part of the cover-up. So they're part of this whole story. So it's not, even if there is other things going on, whether it's Kevin's financial issues and the increasingly dumber and dumber things he does, which almost make you shake your head like, oh my god, how could you be that stupid? But at least it all ties in. So and by it all tying in, it also adds another layer of tension to it. Because not only do we care, but hey, Kevin's now doing something which can fuck everything up, and does on more than one occasion, you know? So I thought that was a really smart decision as well, by not just, you know, you're not just trimming down the number of episodes, but you're also funneling the storylines so that they're more closely tied together. I thought that was a really good decision for this season.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and that all comes to the head at the end during the confrontation when Kevin and Meg confront John, and suddenly it's now John's problem and not their problem anymore. That's when John realizes that he's fucked up, you know.
Yeah.
His own family's turning on him and there's not much he can do about it.
Oh, I think if I recall, the show ends. I think the show ends on a very unresolved note, to say the least, isn't it? He just drives off.
Yeah, he's talking to the ghost of Danny, and Danny's like, got to go, and that's when he just takes off in his truck.
So much like when we were saying about Peaky Blinders, it does make me curious to see what that first episode of season three of Bloodline is going to be, because I'm like, where do you go from here? Because right now, what does he do? And then not to mention the fact that, well, if it wasn't bad enough what John did to his brother, then you got this little matter of what Kevin did to Meg's ex and the cop, the main cop that was pursuing this whole crime. I forgot his name.
I forgot his name too. I just know it's John's partner, his old partner.
Okay, well, the folks who are listening, they've watched the show, they know who we're talking about. I apologize for forgetting the character's name. You'd think I would have written down that. I wrote down a whole bunch of other names for that show. I'm just looking right now. I wrote down, like, Lenny Potts, the retired detective. Bo Bridges is Roy Gilbert. I forgot to write down the other cop's name. Interesting. But, of course, I love that because this we saw Kevin screw up a number of times in season one. But we didn't care because, you know, whatever. But this season, because it's so much more connected to the cover-up and trying to get away with stuff, we care more and we're like, no, don't go sell bricks of drugs because that's going to fuck up everything. Don't tell them that it was you. Because he makes bad decision after bad decision. And John keeps having to like try to clean up after him, culminating in the worst decision of all. Like, oh, murder. So you go from a guy who's a total schmuck who then somehow becomes a drug dealer and then ends up becoming a murderer. It's like I think he's topped his brother now.
He had a rough year.
Yeah, he's had a bad year. The other interesting thing about the season, one of the interesting things about the season, I should say, is, again, when we left off in season one, I think we were kind of like, oh, his son? Yeah, who cares? Whatever. For part of the season, he's kind of an annoying one-note character. And then he starts to become a little bit more sympathetic. I think when we see the flashbacks of him with his father in the restaurant and things of that nature, we start seeing why he is the way he is. And it starts to make a little bit more sense, if that makes any sense, quite frankly.
Oh, it makes total sense. It definitely puts a more sympathetic spin on him. And he's not just a cheap Danny knockoff.
And then going back to people making decisions, like, why would you do that? Because his mom shows up, Evangeline, and we discover that their father, Sam Shepard's character, Daddy Rayburn, because I can't remember what his first name actually is, but who cares, not only knew about the whole situation of Danny having a son, he was actually having money sent to her every month. And that's something that Meg had come across when the bank contacted her, because she was like the trustee or the executor of the finances, whatever. So without knowing what this was all about and not trusting it, whatever, she stopped it. Now, once they found out and it became clear that this was something that the father was doing all this time, but they also then say, well, we're not going to do it anymore. And I was going, oh, I got a bad feeling about that. You know, there's probably a reason why he was doing that. Maybe you should just leave it be. And of course, that kind of leads to things being a little screwy as well. But this ends up introducing another new character who I thought was really fascinating, because I'm not used to seeing him play a character like this. And I grant you, it's probably because I haven't seen many of the movies he's done, because I've heard, oh, he's played shitty, sleazy character before. John Leguizamo's character that I had to cast is Ozzy. Who is basically, I think he's essentially trying to blackmail the Rayburns, essentially.
Yeah, he shows up as a menacing character. And he especially is going after Meg during part of the season. Sensing that she's a weak link.
Right, which is funny because, honestly, in that family, she wouldn't be my first pick as weak link. Kevin's the fucking weakest link in that family. You want to say Meg is number two? Maybe. Okay, I'll buy that. But no, Kevin's the fuck up. But you know, who's gonna be able to get the money together? It's gonna be Meg, and which then leads us to someone I already hinted at before, how she's able to get this money. Another addition to the cast that. I mean, this is one of those actors, when you add him, okay, you already know you're getting the goods. I mean, there's no doubt he's going to be good. That's when you get Bo Bridges to be on your show. I mean, Bo Bridges is just solid. He's been solid in everything I've ever seen him in my entire life. When I watched the show Masters of Sex, he's one of the two best things on that show whenever he does show up on that. So he shows up on this. It's like some seemingly just some like rich guy who they're looking for political support for John's stupid running for sheriff, whatever. But I like that as the series goes on, and then by the time we get to the end of it, we realize, oh, he's kind of a shady motherfucker too. He might turn out to be a bit more of a villain than any of us thought he was going to be. So I kind of like that little reveal as well.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
At the end, is he listening to a tape? Is that what he's? Is it the Danny tape? Is that what he has?
Yeah, I believe it is.
It's hard for me to remember right now. I've watched so many other shows since I watched Bloodline. I'm just trying to get them all in my memory right now. Like, okay, what happened? there was something which I remember thinking at some points, oh, I think that's really cool or really good, you know, acting-wise. And sometimes I think I kind of want to do a parody of it because it keeps happening throughout the show. There was this running thing with Kyle Chandler and his character John. When he had many moments, especially in the second half of the season, where as things are falling apart, and it could be something like his wife finding out what's happened. You know, that's probably like a big example. You probably remember that scene, I'm sure.
Yes.
But a number of other times where he's kind of is just, it's like he can't say anything. It's like he's paralyzed and his eyes are just kind of like, not bulging, but they're definitely wider than normal. I don't know how quite to describe it. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but I remember because it happens a few times. At a certain point, I was like going, okay, if I had known he was going to keep doing this, this would have been my drinking game for the show. I mean, like, every time John is like stunned and doesn't know what to do, I think I gotta take a shot. But,
that happens a lot.
Yeah, it happens a lot this season. I mean, and I understand it, but I was very aware of it. He just keeps having that look on his face. I'm like going, yeah, I can see Don Draper having that look once. He wouldn't do it like 7 times in a season.
You know? No, he wouldn't.
And I say that because I'm still mad that Kyle Chandler beat John Hamm for the Emmy years ago when he shouldn't have. I don't care how good Friday Night Lights was. That was John Hamm's best work on Mad Men. But anyway, he won it later on, so who cares? But overall, I was just genuinely surprised by how much I really liked this season and how it was, I would even say it was more bingeable than the first season, if that makes
sense. Yeah, it was over with before you knew it.
I think, what's the phrase I know a lot of people like to use? To the point where it's almost becoming a cliche I've become annoyed with. A slow burn. they kept referring to the first season. It's a slow burn. It's a slow burn. And I keep wanting to pull out like the Mandy Patinkin meme from Princess Bride. Like, you keep using that word. I do not think you know what it means. Because there's slow burn and then there's bad pacing. You know?
Right.
Or just slow. Because I think, if I recall with season one, you got to be patient with it because they're just laying out a lot of, they're laying out a ton of exposition and character introduction, whatever. It doesn't really jump start until maybe midway through that season when we really start seeing the shit that Danny's up to and what he's doing, because there is not much tension in the early part of that season beyond our flashes of what we know is going to happen in the future. Whereas in this season, we start right off with the tension. We know right now, like, oh, they're trying to cover up a murder. What the fuck are they gonna do? And oh, things keep getting worse because, you know, Kevin's a fuck up, you know, or or John didn't anticipate this, or he decides, oh, I'm gonna run for sheriff because I don't know why, you know. And oh, one funny thing about Bloodline, it's guilty of the. And even the best shows are guilty of this. Why is it every show where you? Because I would say Kyle Chandler is sort of the main character. You know, he's more the main character than anyone else on the show. Whenever you have a main character who has a family, and they have a son and a daughter, it's now become common. The daughter is actually focused on, and you do stuff with her. And the son is kind of an afterthought. Like, there's never much to the son character.
He's always grabbing the box of cereal in the background.
Yeah. Because, and this has been a common thing. I mean, If you watched Homeland, the first couple of seasons, daughter plays a major part. You forget the son's even there. If you watch The Americans, which is a fabulous show, daughter plays a significant part. They do a little bit more with the son, but not much. He might as well not be there. Mad Men, for years, daughter plays a significant part. Now, granted, he's much younger, but the other kid, the son, is kind of an afterthought until you get to like season six. So it seems to be this common thing where, the daughter plays a major part and the son, it's almost like a joke. It's like they shouldn't even name the character. He should just be like son in the script. So they do it here. It's like, I remember I saw his name was like Brandon or something. It's like, wow, I had no idea he had a son named Brandon. I did not know that at all.
That's his name. Oh, okay.
But I would definitely recommend that if people watched season one, if you like season one, you definitely should have given season two a shot. Even if you were skeptical about it, as I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, oh, I was really into this. It more so than season one, I did have to watch episode after episode. I don't know how long it took me to binge Bloodline season two once I started it. But I feel like I did it within a couple of days. I would definitely recommend it. Of course, again, if you listen to this podcast, you've already watched it. So I don't know why I'm recommending it to something you've already seen.
Here's what I like about the show, and I bring this up all the time, is the way the show is shot and the sound of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Is the ambient sound. And I mentioned before that I like to watch my shows with headphones on. And just the bug noises in the background when they're outside, it's amazing. It's amazing. And you could, the way they've got their characters dressed, it's like you can feel the humidity because it looks like they're always wet half the time. It's just a good look to the show.
Absolutely. I remember that was one of the things I loved about season one as well. It's a common refrain I had about it. It's like, I really feel like we're there. I feel the look of it, the feel of it. You can almost feel, it's almost like you can smell it. I feel like, yes, I can smell the water or the swamp. I feel like I need to slap my arm because I might be bitten by a bug or something, And you're absolutely right. You feel that in season two. I do love when a TV show can pull that off. It's also because it's based on where they're shooting in that area. So it's going to have that much more of a, it's almost like a tactile kind of quality, And whereas say like a show like Dexter, which is also a Florida show, but that was more like Miami and those areas, and was actually, I believe, was actually shot there. Pretty sure it was. But that's all about day glow colors and whatever. Goes all the way back to Miami Vice, whatever. But it always felt very surface to me. Whereas something like this, I love when shows can do that. And we can certainly think of other shows that are wildly different, but if you can do that good a job of capturing the environment, the atmosphere, where you can feel like in this, like on the show we're talking about here, it's like you were talking about like the humidity, right? Like you could feel the humidity. It's almost like it's like watching like Breaking Bad. You can feel the dryness of the desert and those road scenes and the way the sun is always blazing during that show, whatever, or it's just, there's that certain quality, and it's something about the cinematography. It's something about just the where they choose to shoot. It's all those things, and like the sounds as well. I mean, that's credit the gaffers, not the gaffers.
The grips,
whatever. I don't feel like it's 2 a.m. Who cares? The people who do the sound, the sound editors, the sound mixers, all that. Really do a great job with a show like this. Whenever I watch a show and it feels real, it's really nice. Either it's the streets of Baltimore in The Wire or the Everglades in Bloodline. I love when it has that kind of quality to it. It definitely lends something to it. So I'm glad you pointed that out. It's something we don't talk about that much when we talk about TV in general. So it's kind of a nice thing to point out with this show.
You're welcome.
Well, other than the fact I am looking forward to the next season and not really sure there's anything else to say about it, I think we can close the book on Bloodline Season 2. Am I correct?
Yep, I think we're done with that.
I think we are as well. So, if once you're done with this podcast out there, listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation about shows like Bloodline, which may take forever to find that thread, but you can probably find the millions of other threads of other current shows, you can find us on Facebook at the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Serious TV Drama Podcast is how you find us on Facebook. Like the page, join the page, and join the conversation. That's how you find us on iTunes as well. You can subscribe to our feed there, as well as rate and review us. Every rating and review we get is greatly appreciated. You don't know how much. It's not like we're asking for money. We're just asking you to type a few things that are nice. And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Twitter handle is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD, as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I don't tweet that much, but, you know, what the hell? Why not have... Why not follow someone else? I'll follow you too. I swear. That's my, you know, one of these days, I don't know why. Do you realize, you probably don't know this, Dan, I don't, even Dan forgot about this. There's actually an email address associated with this podcast that we've never used. I don't know why. I probably at some point should start using it as, oh, if you want to send us any comments or feedback, but I'm afraid if we never get any, I'll feel kind of depressed. So I almost don't want to do it. But I discovered that. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot. We have an email address. And we've like never used it. It's got like it's got like two emails from like April of 2014, and that's about anyway. I dragged this out needlessly. So once again, Jason, thank you for, as you put it, coming off the bench to talk about two decidedly non-superhero shows with me this evening.
Yes. Yes, it was my pleasure.
And yeah, that's about it. I'll hopefully, the next time I'll be recording will be a podcast that you guys will probably have heard before this, because we're doing them all out of order, so I should stop talking and get the fuck off this podcast right now.
So with this might be 135.
Yeah, this should be 135. The previous one, 134. The joke is, I still haven't recorded 133, so it's a little bit confusing. It sounds like a comedy sketch that I saw once, but who cares? Anyway, with that, I will say goodnight to our fellow podcasters who aren't here, like Kate or Dan or Vicky. And goodnight to the listeners, and of course, goodnight to you, Jason.
Goodnight.
storm comes.